Good afternoon. Today we press into the third Sunday of Lent, and we begin a series of rites called the Scrutiny Rites, therefore those that will be baptized at the Easter Vigil. And the following three Sundays, so the third, fourth, and fifth Sunday, are really the end Sundays of Lent. So the church is kind of drawing those that are about to be baptized into a very focused and intentional time of preparation. To really, as the name suggests, scrutinize their lives, to prepare their hearts to receive the amazing sacrament of grace that they'll be receiving in baptism. But the scrutiny rites always follow year A or cycle A for the readings. This year we're actually in cycle C, but during the scrutiny rites we jump back to cycle A so that we always hear the same story, beginning with the woman at the well, and this great ache or thirst that she has. If you heard in that first reading, it began by saying, in their thirst for water, the people grumbled. And then in that gospel reading, the Samaritan woman, in a way, embodies that cry. In her very person and in her kind of being drawn to this place to receive water, this whole encounter between Jesus and the Samaritan woman is meant to be the Jews' longing, this ardent ache to receive living water. I love the Gospel of John. It's the last one written, as I have mentioned before. But throughout the Gospel, he constantly ties in all these little details. Because John was the last one who wrote his gospel, he would have read Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And so I think John tries to fill in the gaps where maybe Matthew, Mark, and Luke hadn't touched upon. And so scattered throughout John's gospel are fine little details, one of which we heard was, the woman comes to the well at noon. There's kind of a twofold reason for this. 12 o'clock is the sun is directly overhead. It's bearing heat down upon the land, the Palestinian desert. So nobody goes to a well at noon. And that's precisely the reason why she wants to go. She doesn't want to fall into contact with anyone else. There's really a sense that you can see with her that she's hiding. Hiding from her own past, her own lies, kind of a sense of guilt that pervades her personality. And so she wants to evade any confrontation. So she comes at noon. Another reason, though, is Jesus Christ hangs upon the cross from noon until 3 p.m. And so this salvific moment of Jesus offering himself to us is tied directly to this situation of the woman at the well. And remember, when Jesus' side is pierced, what comes forth? Water. Blood and water gushes forth from his side. And so John, seeing these fine details when he sets down to write his gospel, ties them together. She comes to this place to satiate a thirst. Wells within the Old Testament are where people woo. They're always the place where husband and wife encounter one another. So Isaac wooed Rebekah at a well. Jacob wooed Rachel at a well. Moses wooed Zipporah at a well. The well, quite literally, is where people come and woo. So there is nothing less than that taking place in this encounter. This woman comes to the well, and Christ offers himself as the final husband that she's been seeking. I love how Jesus doesn't skirt around the issue. He begins by trying to let her come to an understanding of a thirst that she has. The whole beginning conversation is about a living water, a quenching of one's thirst. And it gets her to the point of saying, yes, give me this water. And why does she say it? Because I don't want to be thirsty. And what was the second reason? I don't want to ever have to come here again. She hates going to this place. And yet, She keeps finding herself doing it over and over and over again. But then what does Jesus say? Go bring your husband. And then it gets really awkward. She replies, well, I don't have a husband. And he says, you're right. You do not have a husband. And the five other ones that you had were not your husbands. Ooh. You can sense the Lord finding the wound and just pushing his finger in directly there. Why? Why does he do it? To make her feel more shame? To make her feel just totally terrible about herself? I think it's to reveal to her the real thirst that keeps her coming. Woman, you keep coming back over and over, time and time again to this place. You keep clinging on to another husband that's supposed to satiate the emptiness within your heart. And time again, you find yourself empty and still bearing the same guilt. It's beautiful too. The numeric value here is important. The woman is on her sixth husband. Jesus says you have had five husbands and the one you have now is no longer your husband. She has six husbands. For Jews, the number six is the number of incompleteness or lacking. It's the imperfect number. Jesus comes and offers himself as the final husband for her, the seventh husband. Seven for the Jews is the perfect number, the number of fulfillment. Think of the 7 days of creation. Seven is completion. Another little beautiful detail that John must have witnessed and then writes down is he says, she left her jar and went away. Her thirst has finally been quenched. She no longer needs to come again and again and again to this place where she hopes to satiate a longing, but it's never satisfied. We begin these series of scrutinies beginning precisely there. Our thirst for Christ. We thirst for him. One of the most common comments that I have received as a priest is this. Father, won't it be just wonderful? Can't you just wait until the day that the church changes its teachings and you can get married? I have heard this countless times. Father, wouldn't it be wonderful if you could just have a spouse, get married and be happy and satisfied like the rest of us? I guess that's kind of what's implied. Once you get married, won't you just be totally fulfilled? Why is the priest celibate? Why have I, and it was a sacrificial decision, to say this beautiful, intimate relationship, the most intimate relationship we can have this side of heaven, I choose to let go. Why is the priest celibate? To reveal to all of you that there is something within the human heart that nothing this side of the world, this side of heaven, can satiate. That all of us has a thirst within our deepest bone marrow that even the most perfect and intimate relationship of marriage cannot satisfy. That intimate relationship is but a foretaste, a sign of heaven. And so the priest says in his celibacy, I forego this beautiful intimacy so that I can cling on to the ultimate fulfillment of what my heart aches for. And then become a sign for all of you to realize your spouse won't fulfill you. That's the celibacy of a priest. And that's why the church will never change its teaching. Because Christ wishes to woo you. He wishes to marry you. In a few moments, as you come before the Blessed Sacrament, come before Him recognizing that thirst within you. And I just want to conclude with a quote that I've used before, but I believe it's very powerful. It's Mother Teresa, a reflection from Mother Teresa. And it's called, I Thirst. You notice Jesus' first question, or his first statement in the encounter, actually isn't, what is your thirst? His first statement is, give me something to drink. Jesus begins by revealing God's thirst for her. That's where he starts. He thirsts for her. And really, that's where the opening of our thirst back to God begins, by a recognition of his ardent thirst for me. But Mother Teresa has this beautiful, beautiful reflection, and she writes in the person of Christ. And so I close your eyes and allow the Lord to speak to you. It is true. I stand at the door of your heart day and night. Even when you are not listening, even when you doubt it could be me, I am there, waiting for even the smallest signal of your response, even the smallest suggestion of an invitation that will permit me to enter. But I tell you, I love you. Not for what you have or cease to do. I love you for you, for the beauty and the dignity my Father gave you by creating you in His own image. It is a dignity you have often forgotten, a beauty you have tarnished by sin, but I love you as you are, and I have shed my blood to rescue you. I thirst for you. Yes, that is the only way to even begin to describe my love for you. I thirst for you. I thirst to love you and to be loved by you. So precious are you to me that I thirst for you. Come to me, and I will fill your heart and heal your wounds. I will make you a new creation and give you peace that this world cannot give. I thirst for you.